Coming up on Fronteras, as California struggles with its water crisis and the rest of the Southwest deals with drought, some criticize Arizona farmers for exporting some of their crops overseas. In the final part of our series, Pipe Dreams, we look at the controversy of indirectly exporting water overseas. Also, a new lawsuit in Arizona federal court is trying to block new state abortion restrictions from taking effect on April 1st.
State legislatures, that don't have any medical training are trying to dictate what doctors can actually do.
What's at stake in that state's latest legal fight over abortion? But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Starting April 1st, Arizona's Department of Health is poised to implement new abortion regulations, but Planned Parenthood is asking a judge to stop them. KJZZ's Jude Jaffe Block explains the debate is over how doctors perform one type of abortion.
Thank you for calling Planned Parenthood Arizona. This is Claudia. How can I help you?
Here at the group's Phoenix call center, half a dozen operators are on the phones scheduling appointments, including abortions.
Have you taken a positive pregnancy test?
Last year, Planned Parenthood of Arizona did more than 2,500 medication abortions. That's the type typically done with two pills rather than surgery. And if they were eligible, 40% of women chose it.
It's normally they ask how far along you have to be for a medication abortion.
Claudia is one of the operators here. She says helping women get abortions could make her the target of violence, so we're not using her last name. As for what she tells patients...
It is recommended for them to be seen as soon as possible for the initial ultrasound because they do need to be under 9 weeks for the medication abortion.
But that window will become 7 weeks starting April 1st. That's because the state health department is putting out new regulations based on a 2012 law. One will force doctors doing medical abortions to follow the Food and Drug Administration's instructions on the medication's label. Sounds uncontroversial, right? Actually, that's the subject of a new lawsuit filed this week.
Women will be required to receive 14-year-old health care.
Brian Howard is president of Planned Parenthood of Arizona, a plaintiff in the case. He says the FDA's guidance on this drug from the year 2000 is outdated. A group of doctors has since come up with a new regimen they say is safer and more efficient. It significantly lightens the dose of the first pill and allows the woman to take the second pill in her own home.
Those are improvements that have been learned over the past 14 years that under state law we'll have to pretend never happened.
Plus, Howard says, the regulation could put medication abortions at risk at the Flagstaff Planned Parenthood Clinic, which is the only site offering any abortion services outside of Phoenix and Tucson. Right now, one doctor visits the Flagstaff Clinic only once a week, but the new rules will require women to come back to see the doctor another time.
So unless we were able to find yet another physician for that second visit, it could spell the end of abortion care in northern Arizona.
This is not about putting an undue burden on a woman's right to an abortion. This is simply about ensuring that the abortion medication, it is used consistent to how the FDA approved it.
Josh Credit is a lawyer with the Center for Arizona Policy, a think tank that pushed for lawmakers to approve this change.
We are as concerned about the health and safety of women entering abortion clinics as we are about the preborn children.
But this would be the first time the state requires doctors to follow the FDA guidelines for a particular drug. Why make an exception for this one? Credit says the FDA put the abortion drug mifepristone in a high-risk category.
It's not like this is Tylenol that was approved and can be used for anything.
It's very concerning that state legislatures, that don't have any medical training, are trying to dictate what doctors can actually do.
Dan Grossman is a member of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. That group came out against this type of regulation in other states. Grossman says the FDA did classify mifepristone in a strict category for distribution purposes, but he says it's standard for the medical community to establish new protocols for administering a drug over time.
This is attacking the practice of off-label use of medications that's exceedingly common in the practice of medicine.
Meanwhile, the Arizona legislature continues to work on other ways to regulate abortion in the state. Earlier this week, the House passed a bill that would allow health officials to conduct surprise visits at abortion clinics. Many observers believe it's likely that one will wind up in court, too. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
Thousands of people with developmental disabilities in New Mexico have been waiting, some for more than 10 years, to get the full spectrum of services available through a government program. Deborah Martinez reports from Albuquerque for Fronteras.
I had surgery on my back.
Yeah, we've had a lot of health-related issues. She had open-heart surgery when she was 18 months old.
Leslie Tatz and her mom, Jill, have been through a lot together. Right. But they're like this, Leslie says, as she tightly crosses her fingers.
Where'd you go?
UNM.
You went to UNM? What'd you do at UNM?
32-year-old Leslie was born with multiple physical and cognitive disabilities. On this day, she's getting home from a field trip with Adelante, where she receives supervision during the day while her parents are at work. Medicaid pays for Adelante and Leslie's health care. But she won't get any additional government benefits until she's moved off the waiting list and into the Developmental Disabilities or DD waiver program. Then she'll be eligible to receive things like vocational and speech therapy, counseling, and coaching to help get and keep a part-time job.
So, Leslie, do you want to move into your own apartment?
Heck yeah.
How come?
Why? To do fun things.
With me.
No, not with you.
Leslie and her 18-year-old brother Noah, who also has disabilities, are lucky. Their mom Jill has a master's degree in special education, and she makes sure Leslie and Noah get to doctor's appointments, attend school and daycare, and that they are active in social clubs and Special Olympics. People with developmental disabilities often need help in their daily lives, help that's organized by a case manager for people in the DD waiver program. Jill Tatz says people with disabilities who have no case manager are often parked in front of the television. She's determined not to do this to Leslie and Noah.
I do all the case management, and it's hard. It's really, really hard. Because it's not only community services that we need to access, it's vocational services, it's educational services, and it's medical services.
The Developmental Disabilities Waiver Program was created by Congress in 1981 to transfer people with disabilities out of public institutions and back into the community with government support. New Mexico's DD waiver program has a budget of about $326 million, just under three-quarters of which comes from federal matching dollars. This money provides services for the 4,700 people who are in the program. Some families get paid to take care of their loved ones. The program also pays for people with disabilities to live in small group homes. Meanwhile, there are over 6,000 people on the waiting list. The Tatzes have been waiting for more than 9 years.
When I hear what a rich state we are with natural resources and oil and gas, money is there. Why aren't we using it for these populations that need it the most? We're really doing a disservice to our children, to other adults with disabilities in the community, if we're not funding the services that they're really entitled to.
Even though the Tatzes would be considered middle class, he's a dentist and she teaches at Central New Mexico Community College, they cannot afford the cost of placing both Leslie and Noah in independent living. State officials say the DD waiver waiting list is so long because there just isn't enough money. Kathy Stevenson runs the New Mexico Developmental Disabilities Supports Division. She points out that her agency has reduced the waiting list by 800 over the last several years and plans to reduce it by several hundred more. She says the waiting list is sometimes misunderstood.
When we say waiting, it doesn't mean they're waiting with nothing. Many of these are children who are in school. They're also people who are receiving personal care option services through our state Medicaid program. So they're getting their personal support that way.
Those personal support services include help with bathing, shopping, or grooming. The state spent $124 million on those alone between 2006 and 2008. But the benefits in the DD waiver program include a much broader range of services and therapies that people on the waiting list are eligible for, and they cost an average of more than $71,000 per person. Disability rights advocates are disappointed lawmakers failed to fully fund the DD waiver program during this year's legislative session. Jim Jackson fought for a bill that would have required the Department of Health to say exactly how they plan to reduce the waiting list.
Frankly, I think that this bill was held up a little bit because some people were concerned that we would be bringing a lot of family members to the Capitol, that there'd be a lot of pressure on legislators to put more money in, and I think some people didn't want to hear that.
So as they wait, the Tatz family often relies on the kindness of friends to help out.
I think when you think about having children, you think you're going to do your best job to bring them up, and then they're going to be able to be somewhat independent and live on their own. That's not the case here.
Last year, a state task force found that the state would need to add more than $80 million over the next several years to cut the waiting list time from 10 years down to 3. In Albuquerque, I'm Deborah Martinez.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. In the final part of our series, Pipe Dreams, we look at the controversy of indirectly exporting water overseas. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. The North American Free Trade Agreement turns 20 this year. Key leaders and observers of the pioneering trade agreement met in San Diego Thursday to talk about the past and future of U.S.-Mexico relations. Janet Napolitano, the former Homeland Security Secretary and current University of California president, was there. And she told Fronteras reporter Jill Replicle that cooperation between the U.S. and Mexico should go way beyond NAFTA.
Janet Napolitano had a mixed record as the head of Homeland Security. It was a time of record-breaking deportations, mostly of Mexican citizens, but also relief from deportation for some Mexican children who grew up here. Now in her role as president of the UC system, Napolitano has pledged $5 million in financial aid and special counseling for undocumented students. She says these measures and immigration reform are key to harnessing the potential of the North American workforce. She says 20 years into the future, she hopes the U.S., Mexico, and Canada will present themselves to the world as a unified region.
Where? The manufacturing and the supply chain is distributed among the three countries and where there is a full panoply of student exchange, research exchange, dialogue, collaboration.
Napolitano says the UC system is launching an initiative aimed at increasing student exchange and research collaboration with Mexican universities.
In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
Finishing a bachelor's degree at one of California's public universities in 4 years has gotten harder, and competition for seats in the state's over-enrolled classes has students looking across the Mexican border. Fronteras correspondent Kyla Calvert reports from San Diego.
Anyone who's tried to complete a transfer degree at a local community college can probably relate to the frustration Alfredo Brambila felt when he was a student at Mesa College.
If you wanted to get a class and you have to crash and there's not enough space, and it's not easy. It's not easy to go through the process of college.
During the recession, San Diego community colleges lost about 2,600 class sections to state funding cuts. Brambila went to high school in San Diego and always planned on getting an American college degree. But that goal was still a long way off after 2.5 years at Mesa.
I went to talk to a counselor and I told them just point blank, how much time does it gonna take me to transfer and graduate? And he told me about 4 to 5 years.
Instead of taking on at least 7 years of college, he considered going to Centro de Enseñanza Técnica y Superior, a private university in Tijuana commonly called CETIS.
I could study the same career. If I apply myself, I could graduate in 3.5 years.
Now he's in his second year at the school's sleek campus on a hill overlooking eastern Tijuana. Eduardo Diaz heads the international business program at CETIS. His educational background is a familiar storyline. He was born in the U.S., but raised mainly in Tijuana. He moved back for high school and to get a bachelor's degree at San Diego State. But he says students like Brambila are turning that story around. And they started to trickle onto the CETI's campuses in Tijuana and Mexicali when the recession slashed California's budget.
When students started having trouble getting into local colleges because of budget cuts, some of the high school counselors in Southern California started looking for options because they wanted to help their students.
Now that trickle is a steady stream. This year, about 300 graduates from Southern California high schools are enrolled in CETI's undergraduate programs. That's up from about 50 in 2010. Diaz says attracting students who are intent on finishing their degrees on time helps the university with one of its primary goals.
To be an institution of quality that sets a very clear timetable for students, and we work so that they can graduate, because nobody's productive unless they're working. That's one of the things that we believe. So we want our graduates to be productive.
The university expects another 75 to 100 California high school grads to enroll next fall, and the school is also working toward a guaranteed transfer agreement with Imperial Valley College. Alfredo Brambila says he's happier at the Mexican school. Like many of the other students coming from the U.S., he has family in Tijuana. He also liked being able to take classes in his major, electrical engineering, right away, instead of having to go through California's general education requirements first.
If you're studying med school, engineering, law school, anything, you get to do like special classes since first or second semester, third semester, fourth semester, like those 2 years. And that's the time when you say, this is really for me.
The private school's tuition is about 50,000 pesos a semester, which comes to about $3,700. This year, in-state tuition at San Diego State is just a little bit less, about $3,400 a semester. Brambila, like more than half of CETI students, gets financial aid. He says he pays about half of the normal tuition. Even U.S. federal aid can follow students across the border to CETIs since the university got U.S. accreditation in 2012. That accreditation means graduates' degrees will also mean more to U.S. employers, which Diaz says means a lot for the school's future.
A lot of these students are U.S. citizens. Once they finish at CETIs, they're going back to the United States, and that's where they're going to develop their professional careers. What we want, and it's actually too early to tell, but we want these young professionals to succeed. And they are the ones who are going to raise our profile in the United States in practice.
CETI's leaders even say satellite programs in the U.S. could be in the school's future. In San Diego, I'm Kyla Calvert.
Federal officials are cutting off water to some California farms stuck in the worst drought on record. At the same time, Arizona farmers are irrigating their fields with the diminishing Colorado River. They're using the water to grow most of the country's winter vegetables and even shipping some crops over to China. In the final part of our series, Pipe Dreams, we look at the controversy of indirectly exporting water overseas. From the Changing America desk, Laurel Morales reports.
Colorado River water reaches David Sharp's farm in southwestern Arizona in a narrow artery called a lateral that runs along his fields. He releases just enough to soak an acre.
You can see the water just working its way across.
Sharp says today most farmers use a laser to level their land, so the plants are irrigated evenly and little water is wasted. He also rotates his crops to keep his soil healthy. It's methods like these that made it possible for Yuma County farmers to reduce the amount of water they use by half in the last two decades.
We in agriculture are business people first, and we have a finite resource, be it water or fertilizer or fuel, any of those things. We are not going to waste any of that, because if we waste it, it affects our bottom line.
Sharp was thinking about his bottom line when he recently decided to sell his alfalfa to China, where there's huge demand.
It really has exploded over the last 3 years. China wants to eat the same things we want to eat. They want cheese, eggs, milk. They don't have the feed, the protein feed, to give them that.
But critics like University of Arizona's Robert Glennon say it's not just alfalfa these farmers are shipping. They're exporting the Southwest water supply in the middle of a crisis.
The alfalfa is a water-guzzling crop.
Glennon says farmers like Sharp are shipping more than 50 billion gallons of water overseas embedded in their crops. That's enough drinking water for 500,000 families.
It's fine to allow for that export, but shouldn't those farmers also be able to work out deals for the water with California cities or even with the city of Las Vegas? And I expect that a city like Las Vegas would pay handsomely for a small amount of water that's currently used to grow alfalfa for export.
Farmers argue their water consumption is necessary because growing cities need water and food. At the Southwest Ag Summit held recently in Yuma, I notice a bumper sticker on a truck in the parking lot that says, "No farms, no food." Farmer Jonathan Dinsmore points to his cotton shirt and says, "No farms, no clothes."
So choose your, pick your poison here.
Dinsmore is a fourth-generation farmer. His family grows alfalfa, lettuce, and wheat. He says it's important to keep the crops moving, and right now, demand overseas is hot.
I would say the decision to export, pretty much for us, it weighs solely on our buyer. If we have somebody come in with a bid that's $20 more a ton, we're likely less to consider where it's going and how quickly can they get it out of the shop and how quickly can they get a check to us so that we can continue to operate.
Dinsmore says he and other farmers are not squandering the water. The majority of growers in the region are willing to gamble with new water-saving methods.
Yearly, we're facing diminishing resources, and they're saying by 2055, we're going to have 9 billion people in this world, as opposed to the 7 or 7.5 or so that we have now. How can we maintain that?
That's why everyone I talk to says both farmers and cities need to work to conserve water. I'm Laurel Morales, reporting from Yuma.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.